4. The Benares put into Edge a little after noon on the next day. One of the mantas had died in harness, only 20 kilometers downriver from their destination, and A. Betic had cut it loose. The other had lasted until they tied up to the bleached pier, and then it rolled over in total exhaustion, bubbles rising from its twin air holes. Betic ordered this man to cut loose as well, explaining that it had a slim chance of surviving if it drifted along in the more rapid current. The pilgrims had been awake and watching the scenery roll by since before sunrise. They spoke little, and none had found anything to say to Martin Silenus. The poet did not appear to mind. He drank wine with his breakfast and sang bawdy songs as the sun rose. The river had widened during the night, and by morning it was a 2-kilometer-wide highway of blue-gray cutting through the low green hills south of the Sea of Grass. There were no trees this close to the sea, and the browns and golds and heather tones of the main shrubs had gradually brightened to the bold greens of the 2-meter-tall northern grasses. All morning the hills had been pressed lower, until now they were compressed into low bands of grassy bluffs on either side of the river. An almost invisible darkening hung above the horizon to the north and east. And those pilgrims who had lived on ocean worlds and knew it as a promise of the approaching sea had to remind themselves that the only sea now near was comprised of several billion acres of grass. Edge never had been a large outpost, and now it was totally deserted. The score of buildings lining the rutted lane from the dock had the vacant gaze of all abandoned structures, and there were signs on the riverfront that the population had fled weeks earlier. The Pilgrim's Rest, a 3-century-old inn just below the crest of the hill, had been burned. A. Betic accompanied them to the summit of a low bluff.
"What will you do now?"
Colonel Kassad asked the android.
"According to the terms of the Temple Bondature, we are free after this trip. We shall leave the Benares here for your return and take the launch downriver, and then we go on our way."
"With the general evacuations?"
asked Braun Lamia.
"No,"
Betic smiled.
"We have our own purposes and pilgrimages on Hyperion."
The group reached the rounded crest of the bluff. Behind them, the Benares seemed a small thing tied to a sagging dock. The Huli ran southwest into the blue haze of distance below the town and curved west above it, narrowing toward the impassable lower cataracts 12 kilometers upriver from Edge. To their north and east lay the Sea of Grass.
"My God,"
breathed Braun Lamia. It was as if they had climbed the last hill in creation. Below them, a scattering of docks, wharves and sheds marked the end of Edge and the beginning of the sea. Grass stretched away forever, rippling sensuously in the slight breeze and seeming to lap like a green surf at the base of the bluffs. The grass seemed infinite and seamless, stretching to all horizons and apparently rising to precisely the same height as far as the eye could see. There was not the slightest hint of the snowy peaks of the Bridal Range, which they knew lay some 800 kilometers to the northeast. The illusion that they were gazing at a great green sea was nearly perfect, down to the wind-ruffled shimmers of stalks, looking like white caps far from shore.
"It's beautiful,"
said Lamia, who had never seen it before.
"It's striking at sunset and sunrise,"
said the consul.
"Fascinating,"
murmured Saul Weintraub, lifting his infant so that she could see. She wiggled in happiness and concentrated on watching her fingers.
"A well-preserved ecosystem,"
Hetmastine said approvingly.
"The Muir would be pleased."
"Shit,"
said Martin Silenus. The others turned to stare.
"There's no fucking wind wagon,"
said the poet. The four other men, woman, and android stared silently at the abandoned wharves and empty plain of grass.
"It's been delayed," said the consul.
Martin Silenus barked a laugh.
"Or it's left already. We were supposed to be here last night."
Colonel Cassad raised his powered binoculars and swept the horizon.
"I find it unlikely that they would have left without us. The wagon was to have been sent by the Shrike Temple priests themselves. They have a vested interest in our pilgrimage."
"We could walk," said Lenar Hoyt. The priest looked pale and weak, obviously in the grip of both pain and drugs, and barely able to stand, much less walk.
"No. It's hundreds of clicks, and the grass is over our heads."
"Compasses."
"Compasses won't work on Hyperion,"
said Cassad, still watching through his binoculars. "Direction finders, then."
"We have an IDF, but that isn't the point,"
said the consul.
"The grass is sharp. Half a click out, and we'd be nothing but tatters."
"And there are the grass serpents,"
said Cassad, lowering the glasses.
"It's a well-preserved ecosystem, but not one to take a stroll in."
Father Hoyt sighed and half collapsed into the short grass of the hilltop. There was something close to relief in his voice when he said, "All right, we go back." A. Betek stepped forward.
"The crew will be happy to wait and ferry you back to Keats in the Benares, should the wind wagon not appear."
"No. Take the launch and go."
"Hey, just a fucking minute. I don't remember electing you dictator, amigo. We need to get there. If the fucking wind wagon doesn't show, we'll have to find another way."
The consul wheeled to face the smaller man.
"How? By boat? It takes 2 weeks to sail up the main and around the north littoral to Otho or one of the other staging areas. And that's when there are ships available. Every seagoing vessel on Hyperion is probably evolved in the evacuation effort."
"Dirigible, then,"
growled the poet. Braun Lamia laughed.
"Oh, yes. We've seen so many in the 2 days we've been on the river."
Martin Silenus whirled and clenched his fists, as if to strike the woman. Then he smiled.
"All right then, lady. What do we do? Maybe if we sacrifice someone to a grass serpent, the transportation gods will smile on us."
Braun Lamia's stare was arctic.
"I thought burned offerings were more your style, little man."
Colonel Cassad stepped between the two. His voice barked command.
"Enough! The consul's right. We stay here until the wagon arrives. M. Mistine, M. Lamia, go with A. Betek to supervise the unloading of our gear. Father Hoyt and M. Silenus will bring some wood up for a bonfire."
"A bonfire?" said the priest. It was hot on the hillside.
"After dark,"
said Cassad.
"We want the wind wagon to know we're here. Now let's move."